Excuse me. Hey, boys. Yeah, you. Got something to say? Share it with the whole class.
Hello and welcome to The Back of the Class, a guide to education from the kids at the back of the class. As always, I'm Patrick O'Shea, an assistant professor of instructional technology at Appalachian State University. Joining me, as always, or as sometimes, occasionally, is Simon Richmond, a technology associate at the EDC, the Education Development Center. And, of course, the rock of the show in
The light at the end of the tunnel.
No. The rock in so many ways. The rock of the show. Daniel Curry Corcoran, the man with the plan. The idea man, if you will.
Yeah. That was a good one.
You're welcome. Yeah. In keeping with our tradition from the last couple of episodes, today we're doing something a bit different. Over the past few shows, each of us has been presenting a concrete plan on how we can address one of the issues that we've discussed over the last couple of years of our podcast. And so today is Daniel's turn to present his proposal, in whatever form it may be.
I was going to do it as a song.
However half-baked it might be.
I thought I would sing it.
All right, so go ahead, Daniel.
All right, well, it is.
Wow me, jazz hands.
Simon's being really quiet tonight, yeah. Okay, never mind, he's out on the
right
West Coast.
I'm silent in anticipation.
Yes.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you, very nice. All right, so what I'm going to do tonight is I'm going to pitch an idea that I've been beating around in my head that, as you know, for those of you who have listened to me over the months and years that I've been broadcasting on air with my fellow colleagues here, I can't often stick to one issue. I mean, it's quite a systemic, comprehensive issues that we're trying to deal with here when we're talking about education reform.
Aside from love.
Yes, of course. Well, you know, love. I mean, love is kind of all-embracing, comprehensive, you know?
Yes.
Lots of different types of love. There's self-love, community love.
You know. Oh, dear God. We're going down a dark path.
All right, so what I would talk about is one of this idea I've been beating around in my head about a couple of different things. So, one, we've been talking a lot about technology and how technology can be used, and we had Simon's eloquent presentation a couple weeks ago, which was very well done. Hats off to Simon for coming around and actually thinking positively about technology. We've also been talking a lot about teacher development. You know, we had the, school in New York City that we looked at a little bit? Or
school,
the after-school program?
It was a school of
one. Yeah, so, you know, this idea of what school looks like and how we're preparing students, we got technology, how we're preparing teachers. So, my idea is this. I'd really like to talk about the intersection of these different variables to see if we can come up with a better model for how to pull all this together. One of the things we've seen, and one of the things that I think Simon brought up a couple weeks ago, is this purpose of technology. I think a lot of times we haven't really evolved a great deal in how we think about using technology. I think in many cases we're still at the old model of if you buy it and if you put it in the classroom, they will magically come around to experience it and use it. And I don't think we've gotten really far from that old model of, you know, the three computers in the back of the class. The new thing is you know, that students are coming to school now with a lot of different types of technology. You know, it's all on the belt, you know, these smartphones or cell phones. And so we're actually seeing a different type of technology that's being integrated, which actually puts a lot of our teachers at more disadvantage because they have even less and less experience with this. Okay, so we got this idea of technology, and Simon talked about, you know, really using not using the technology and trying to fit our instruction into that, but really using technology in a way that expands our instruction. So one of the things I was really thinking about, and this came from a conversation my wife and I were having a long time ago, about why can't we just do some things differently? You know, why can't, if we know high schoolers don't, if their brains don't get ticking until about 9 o'clock, why don't we just go ahead and change that? Okay, so one of the things, we were driving into our neighborhood, and one of the things that I said is, if you drive up this neighborhood, you know, you're going to have black people, and you're going to have white people, and you're going to have Asian people, because I live in a very diverse part of Newport News. You're going to have people of all different religious persuasions, but the one thing that really holds us in common is that we've all had a singular education experience that we all know in the United States of America. We all sat at our desk. We all listened to the teacher give knowledge. So as soon as we try to break away with that model, all of a sudden we're doing experiments on people's kids, people's, you know, children. So people are often very against kind of messing with this model, even though they know the model is outdated. And it's probably not preparing students for any type of environment that they're ever going to face in real life. So the idea is, how do we restructure that? Hence my idea. So one of the things that I thought we'd be doing is, we have a lot of nice new technologies now, from the iPad, or, you know, I'm not really centered on any particular device. You know, we have this new Motorola tablet. Heck, you know, we have having a lot of success, even in Newport News, with our augmented reality project using just regular iPods. So one of the things that I would propose is that, how do we structure our educational system so that it better prepares students for what they're going to face, this idea of being college, career, and citizen ready, okay? So what we would do is, we would take some classes, and this is just a pilot implementation here, and we'll use chemistry as an example. So what we're going to do is, we're going to take and go out to all of our parents for students that are in upcoming chemistry classes, who are going to sign up for chemistry, and again, I'm just using chemistry as an example, and we're going to ask them if they would participate in a brand new type of classroom, okay? So what we're going to do is, instead of meeting every day, as they typically would, let's say chemistry meets first period, students are actually going to be in an internship, and we're going to work with our, you know, Newport News is a pretty comprehensive idea of this career pathways, in that, you know, students at the elementary level begin to investigate careers, they begin to learn more about them. In middle school, they really begin to do more research into different careers, and at high school, they're actually on a career path. You know, let's say they wanted to go into medicine, well, their counselors would say, "Yeah, here's some classes you want to take." You know, these careers aren't locked-in careers, but it's kind of, you know, if you want to be an engineer, you need that extra year of math. You know, you can't just settle with getting the minimum graduation requirements. So the idea is that at the high school level, we would meet with parents and say, okay, what we're going to do is, we'd be able to line up internships or some type of exposure during the regular school day, during the morning time. You know, say 7:30 to 10 or 7:30 to 11, and students wouldn't come to school. They're going to be out at an internship or at a job shadowing experience or doing something volunteer in the school, whether that's, you know, working with ninth graders. I'm thinking of upperclassmen here, but, you know, maybe they're at an elementary school volunteering or, you know, substitute teaching, whatever the case may be. But I'm thinking more of type of internship experience. Then what they would do is they'd have a couple of requirements. There's so much information now that's available on the web. You know, we have MIT who puts all of their lectures online. We have Berkeley who does the same thing. All of this information is available on the internet. The problem is, we just haven't done a really good job of packaging this information. You know, teachers have to go to different websites and use different links. But the idea is, with different technologies that we have now, we can actually package that information so that students could get real-time access to it. So one of the requirements is that, using an iPod or some type of the new iPad, which has a camera on it, we could actually harness these lectures that are already available on the web. Because if you go out to MIT or Berkeley, you know, they have whole semesters of chemistry lectures that are lined up. You know, all 25 classes or whatever it may be. So students would have to participate in a lecture a day. They would actually have to go out there. They would have to engage in the lecture using their iPad, because we would set them up. And again, we'd have to get into a lot more detail. But this idea of using quick response technologies, these QR codes, you may have seen them. I'm sure everybody sees them at Best Buy, where you can hold your smartphone up, click the little barcode that appears, that then takes you to a web address. So they would take them into these video experiences. Then, you know, after their internship, they would be at school. That evening, because we haven't had to have those teachers working in the morning, they now have office hours in the evening with their teacher, because they're just going to get on to any type of net meeting, or and they're going to have office hours. The teacher can go over them and say, "Hey, what did you learn today? Here's our major points. Here's your topics for tomorrow, whatnot," and so forth. So that's kind of how that class would look. So we're kind of reinventing what students are getting, because then we have this whole infrastructure where students can talk about their internship experiences. So that's one aspect of it, this idea of using the technologies that we have available to expand the classroom or augment what students would traditionally get. The nice thing about this is that you could actually really create, because we're going to have to bring these kids into the classroom every once in a while, whether it's for a chemistry lab or for a reflection on their internship, but they would actually have to come in. So what do we do with this when we have these teachers? Because let's say we get 60 students who want to participate. Well, you really can't do, I mean, it'd be very difficult. Your class size would be huge with 60 students. So the idea is that now you can kind of restructure how your teacher development works, because the idea of teaching is much different. We actually get more to, you're not necessarily the giver of information, but you must be much more skilled at being a facilitator so that you help people learn and take advantage of different resources. So we're going to have a skilled trainer. All right, so let's say the idea of a teacher is now this skilled trainer that's facilitating this 60 group, you know, lecture hall type format, much like you'd see at the university level, say. But a lot of it will be virtual, a lot of it will be distant. But the idea is that the younger teachers, these younger chemistry teachers, could then work in a collaborative format. Because, you know, you have 60 students that are going to participate. Well, that's three classes, okay? So the idea is that the two younger teachers, or the two junior teachers, or, you know, teachers in training, would then be able to work with this master teacher to become better teachers. So the idea is that, you know, you would actually have a different environment where, you know, you no longer, when you bring kids back in for, let's say, a lab or something, your teachers could be walking around and working in small groups, and you'd have more teachers in the classroom. You have a different way of training teachers because they're constantly working. And again, I know we don't have a lot of time to get into actually how that professional development model would look, but the idea is that this would allow us to really actually have an approach to changing what high school traditionally looks like, taking advantage of some modern-day technologies that allow us to expand it. And since we're not locked into a room which requires, can only have 25 seats, we can really expand that out. We have a way of actually giving teachers, new teachers, the experience of working with mentor teachers and in other capacities so that they can learn their skills and then one day become a master teacher, per se. So essentially that, in a nutshell, is the idea. And I think in Newport News, we've actually begun to put in place little parts of this idea. So I don't think it's completely foreign. It would just take a little bit of tying it all together to make it a reality. So with that being said, I wanted to give you guys a good 15, 20 minutes to ask me your questions.
All right. Well, then I'll turn it over to Simon so that he can ask his questions.
You guys
first.
Were amazingly quiet. Is that because it was just entranced or?
No, I was asleep.
Oh, okay. So,
what
you needed me to repeat anything, just let me know.
You said you're doing little bits of this in Newport News. Like, what kinds of things, what components are you implementing, and what's the response been to them?
Well, I mean, we're doing some different things. One, we have a huge, like, the Career Pathways Initiative is already a go. I mean, I think we're seeing that more and more. We're hearing a lot more of that from the federal, this idea of we're not preparing students for what they're going to come out against. So Newport News is heavily working with area businesses. You know, the Newport News Shipyard is really big, Ferguson Enterprises. So we've been actually going out to some of these different businesses and saying, hey, would you host it? Would you offer an internship? Could you have a job shadowing opportunity? One of the things that we're going to have available for spring break this year is our communications department has been really reaching out to different areas to say, hey, would you give a student a job shadowing experience over the spring break? So this idea of creating internships and getting the community involved and giving students other ideas has been very fruitful. We've been doing a lot with the iPads, as Patrick can talk in more detail, but we've been working with some different fifth grade schools to actually develop these augmented reality experiences using iPads where teachers are collaborating on different ways of introducing their curriculum. For instance, teachers are creating narrative structures, and these are fifth grade teachers that are creating these narrative structures. Let's say they want to teach their lesson is about the plates of the earth. Okay, so one of the teachers under Patrick's expert tutelage have created this experience called, you know, Layers of the Earth, and students have to pick a role, and they use their iPod touches and this quick response technology to kind of augment their learning. So this would be how the students would interact, whether that be on a net meeting with teachers or to interact with different media online. And this is what's really been surprising. This part of the project has exploded. I'm getting calls every day from these fifth grade teachers that say, hey, what do you think about doing this? You know, we have we developed this little game where elementary students would use their library and explore textbooks like nursing. And so we've created some videos, we've created some quizzes where students would begin to use their library, get a nurse's book off the shelf and use these iPods. The students want to write the scripts. They want to be a part of creating these experiences. We found a way to really leverage technology to take advantage of some of the curricular changes we want to make. Always the tricky part, and how do we get the buy-in from staff to say, hey, I'll participate in something like that. So I think those two components have been received very well, small scale.
So how would you deal with, is this just at the high school level are you talking about, or are we talking about something different for elementary and middle school, or maintain what they already are doing?
I was just thinking the high school. My idea was more focused at the high school because, you know, it's just easier to control student mobility in and out of the building because, you know, the upperclassmen are actually driving. So they could, you know, those who are driving, or you could, it's easier to provide them with some type of internship opportunity, job shadowing experience to where they could, you know, they could arrive at school in the morning and then we could then transport them to, like, say, the shipyard or wherever they're going to be. We actually are putting in place a very similar model next year. It's going to be called, the exact title eludes me, but this idea of essentially like 12th grade college. So students that have flexibility in their schedule we are going to have a partnership with Thomas Nelson College where they're going to come to school and we're going to transport them. You know, they're going to take their English class or their art history class and we'll transport them back. So that's why right now I'm staying at the college, at the high school level. But, I mean, I'd imagine that we could put something in place. My thing is we'd want to start at a level that we would be successful, and I'm just not really sure how to tie that in at the elementary level yet, other than, you know, making them more aware of the technologies and interacting in different ways with curriculum online and stuff.
Well, this sounds like a really interesting idea, and it really does align with the kind of stuff that I was talking about last week and what David Williamson Schaefer talks about in terms of practicum as a learning experience, and how if we really want to teach the innovation skills that seem to be necessary in the world of the 21st century, that we have to contextualize the learning in the idea of, you know, learning a career rather than a distinct chunk of information. He talks a lot about different careers like urban planners and resolution negotiators and, you know, a bunch of others. But he talks about them in terms of how would you create an educational game that mimics that learning, that would, in essence, you know, teach the kids how to be a professor, you know, of whatever, or an urban planner or something, without having to force them through all of the specialized skill before they're necessary, or before they really feel prepared to do that.
I mean, I was thinking, even, you know, I was talking about having these larger platforms where more students would be, you know, when they did, let's say we brought them back in the class, you know, once a week where they would come in, like, you know, like a freshman, I don't know, they do that at a lot of universities now where the freshmen all meet in clusters of freshmen to, you know, keep them in school and whatnot. This would be a great opportunity, and I know, Simon, you and I have all had this idea, we had the luxury of, when we did our student teaching, how much, Simon, were you an intern?
No, I wasn't an intern. You mean a prime intern?
Yeah, like a prime intern. So Simon will work closely with the program, though. So this idea of, you know, when we would have these larger lecture hall settings, this would be a great opportunity to actually reach out to some of our colleges of education to where we would have a master teacher, and you could have two or three interns that are earning credit or getting paid a small amount of money to come in and work with students in small groups and get that experience of working with students, seeing a teacher actually work, and, you know, and it would just be more like a TA type model. But again, giving our next generation the exposure that they need to work with students and to plan curriculum and whatnot. So
if you were proposing this as a like an actual project that was going to be happening at the, you know, fall of next year, we're talking about a small scale pilot thing that we could test and see how effective it is, or are you talking about something larger than that?
I would like to have 60 chemistry students. Mm-hmm. Even if that's across two or three different schools, but to get a large cadre of students, because one of the things, we'd have to be able to support them with some type of internship experience. So, man, I don't think it's realistic to go out there, and it would really be dependent on how much business community buy-in, so there'd be some hustle to get that done. But I'm talking a larger type of pilot-type experience, yeah, to get it off the ground, see how it would work, you know, begin the planning stages, and maybe roll that out, because, you know, it's all semester-based. So maybe even prepare for a larger contingent in the spring, or maybe the students would go on to another class and follow them into some other opportunity. But, yeah, I guess I would propose it first at a smaller scale. But I think it's easy to ramp up, because the nice thing about it is we're really going to harness a lot of the content that's already available on the web. I mean, we have websites like khanacademy.org and, you know, the MIT and the Berkeley. You could really create a packaged curriculum that's all just based off things that are saved on a web server, because you can download it and save these type things, or just web addresses. And then to really package this using QR technologies, or these quick response, you know, these type of barcodes, where all a student would need to do is they would have a date and they would have a couple of barcodes, and they could scan those. They could do it whenever they want, watch the lecture, participate in the learning experience. So I think it's easy to ramp up because it's not seat specific.
So let me ask this: how do you think this would how do you think this would work in, say, a very rural environment where they may not have the business support for a wide scale internship kind of program?
Yeah, but what are they doing in rural communities? I mean, are we talking about our farming communities? I know I do a lot of gardening. That's one of my hobbies that take my mind off of all this education speak when I have a moment. I mean, I know some friends of mine at work know that I like to garden and stuff, and they've sent me this federal website that just has millions and millions and millions of dollars for first-time farmers. So, I mean, this idea of if it is a rural community and, you know, people want to stay in a rural community and they're going to go into farming or they're going to go into some type of, you know, work there, if they're going to stay in their home areas, why couldn't they go out and do that? I mean, they could go learn what it is to be a farmer, or and really tie that into the biology of growing crops and the botany, or the issue of, you know, rearing animals and all the biology that's tied into that. So I think it could be feasible. The issue we're going to have with the rural communities is just the infrastructure for the, you know, the ability to use the technology, whether, you know, do we have adequate, you know, wireless capacity and whatnot, even in the home. But that's the nice thing about these new, you know, the new tools that we have is they're all 3G, so, or 4G or whatever the case may be, that, you know, this may be a way to close some of this digital divide. Someone would have to foot that bill, but I think that's where you could possibly get some buy-in from different types of partners. So that's what I would propose for some, maybe in the rural community. I think there's some different issues to work out there.
And who knows how this would work? I'm just talking off the top of my head, but couldn't you devise some kind of virtual internship? I mean, it's great when you have a professional interest within your own community, but there's all kinds of jobs out there that are, you know, beyond the reach of the local town.
Yeah.
So can you study, you know, finance out of London if you're in Wichita? I don't know,
but that you raise a very good question. And I think, Simon, I mean, this is very similar to, I mean, I think some of the stuff, and I'm going to guess, you know, that you're working on in Malawi, or some of the different, you know, research that maybe we've talked about in the past, this idea of, you know, delivering content in a rural environment. But the idea is, you know, there's whole economies set up online. I mean, like, let's say Second Life, for instance. I mean, there are Second Life economies. I mean, students could actually go out there and start a business in the virtual world and sell things, whether that's just virtual things or whatnot. But that would be one way of doing that. Another way might be to have, getting back to our discussion, remember the education with soul, where I think my friend's name, Sugata Mitra, right? He wanted to have these centers where students would interact with a professional. Well, this would be a great way to actually tie that in, to actually tie in the School of One, where maybe we do have these one-to-one internships that students then have, and maybe they're working with a banker in London, and they're being given different types of things that they have to do for the banker, whether it's research or, you know, pulling things together. So, I mean, I think it's a, that's another opportunity that we could explore.
Well, can we step back to one step earlier in this equation?
No.
He always wants to go backwards.
How do, like, so you have all these great internships set up, and kids can pick and choose where they want to learn more about an interesting career. Yep. But how are they learning about themselves? How are they learning what they're interested in? How are they learning what potential jobs are there out there? Like, what is the system? The system as it stands now is supposed to be preparing students to work in the professional world. And we're all scrambling because the definition of work is changing so quickly.
Yeah.
But we aren't really teaching them anything about who they are. And that was always my big question when I was, maybe I'm just excessively introspective. But in high school, I just didn't
really.
I just didn't know who I was and what I was in. There were all kinds of interesting things, but
you were Canadian. That's all you needed to know.
Like, there's a lot of angst in the teenage mind, and sure, you can start teaching who a person is to themselves a lot earlier than high school.
Yeah.
I recently found, in going through some old papers, a personality test that I took in the 12th grade. I can't remember who puts them out there, but there's all kinds of them. Kind of a career preparations test. You fill in the bubbles, and then it gives you a score, and it tells you, you know, you really should be working in the arts or whatever. I was surprised at how accurate it was. Looking back, it
told you to be a dancer?
I'm in my leotards right now. But I mean, what kind of tools would you equip teachers with and classrooms with to help children understand what, not only what kind of world they're stepping into, but who they are?
You mean like who they are, like spiritually and emotionally, or what their talents are?
If you want to go all the way back there, then yes, I want to hear your answer to that question. I think that's
I want to actually know the question you asked, so...
See, I'm asking about talents. I'm asking about talents and interests. I don't think we go into existential, spiritual questions.
See, I would think that, just to answer the question that I think Simon is asking, which may not be, but I'm going to take a shot anyways. It seems to me that you could have a staged approach that would allow students to test a bunch of different things that they might be interested in, for just long enough to know whether it was something they wanted to pursue. And then have the more extensive internship kind of process that's the semester or a year long based on whatever they've found there. I think that it's coming at it from maybe the wrong direction to think, you know, how are we supporting that in this model when we don't really support it now. And it's just assumed that kids are going to find out who they are or want to be, but all we teach them is calculus equations. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, one of the things that I think you raise a good question. I mean, I would agree with Pat that right now we're not doing a good job of this anyway. I mean, what do students want to do? Well, they want to have a career or go to college, and they want to do what they're familiar with, which is usually, you know, what their parents are or what their uncles or whoever they see. And we know we have a lot of kids out there, especially in our urban and our rural environments, that don't have any, you know, role models who have gone on to be doctors or to be lawyers or, and you see, it's always the lawyer or the doctor. So even when, this brings me back to the project we're doing at Hydenwood Elementary School, in that, you know, what careers are students exposed to at a very young age? Well, you know, firefighters, you know, doctors, policemen. They get the same thing every year. So one of the things we're doing to equip teachers is this idea of harnessing the information that's out there on the web, whether they're videos or, you know, even parents who might have interesting professions like wildlife photography. So one of the things we're going through is, like, we're going through the fifth grade math book, and we're looking for the different careers that are in this math book. So one of the ones that we have there is at the beginning of, I think it's the decimal chapter, they have this picture. You know, they usually have these random pictures in the math book of, you know, it's two blue whales, and it's a wildlife photographer, and he's just filming the whales. And so one of the things I've been going around teachers and saying, and I put a barcode in there, and I found a video online that talks about wildlife photography. It's a really good video. It says what wildlife photographers are and whatnot. So a student would just come in, he'd be doing his math homework, and he'd say, hey, here's a barcode. So he goes up to his teacher or whatnot, you know, maybe gets the iPod off the cart, and he goes and he scans this, you know, just holds the iPod up there, and immediately takes him to a video on wildlife photography. Well, how many students in an urban elementary school are going to be exposed to professionals who do wildlife photography? You know, and from there we can really build it into our curriculum where, okay, maybe students have to, if you watch the video, you got to write a little paragraph on what you learned. So I think it's this idea in these early years, in these early elementary years, students are investigating all the careers that are out there. You know, it might be wildlife photography or welding, and they're just learning, you know, they're, you know, getting experience and getting exposure. So that when they get to the middle school level, you're able to harness that a little bit to say, you know, hey, what have you seen and what do you like? And so that when we get them into their job shadowing experiences later, they have a good feel for what they like to do.
Well, that is a good idea. And it would be fairly straightforward to set up. But you're still leaving it to chance. I mean, it's a random brush with that picture in that math book. And it's the kid's sense of curiosity which is kind of inherently motivating them to look something up. But isn't there an active role that a classroom can play, a school or a teacher can play, to get kids pondering and learning about what it is that they want from life?
Yeah, but I would say that you do that by setting up the learning so that it provides kids the opportunity to experience some of those things. And, you know, if you can set up enough learning experiences, for instance, with Newport News, we've got one fifth grade augmented reality experience that's based on a rock show. But instead of having the kids be the lead singer, we have them being, you know, light technicians or sound engineers, that kind of thing, where they, you know, it's not over romanticizing those careers, but it's giving them some sense of what you would actually do in that kind of career. You do those kinds of small-scale things, and it can, you know, spark the interest of kids to go down that path a little bit further, see if it's something they really would like to pursue, that kind of thing.
And see, like, my daughter's 8, you know, you guys know that, of course, but, I mean, the idea that, you know, I mean, she'll come home every day, and she's like, yeah, I know what I want to be now. I'm like, oh, where is this on the list? You know, she wants to be a waitress. She wants to be a biologist. She wants to study ducks. Isn't that, by giving kids the curiosity and the exposure, I think that is going to help our teachers better harness the interest in the classroom.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, because otherwise, you know, we're still hampered by this accountability movement and test, and getting through these standards. We have to find a way to hook kids and to make curriculum more relevant. So, hey, if you're interested in being a wildlife photographer, all right, well, let's go out there and learn a little bit about photography. So, you know, what are the parts? So, I mean, it's a way of starting kids to be engaged. And then I think the problem is what our teachers deal is they say, oh, kids aren't engaged anymore. You know, kids don't pay attention. So let's engage them and then try to get our teachers to work that direction. It's a different strategy for our teachers, but I think it's something that it'll take off.
Okay, well, I hate to interrupt what's turned out to be a surprisingly good conversation based on Daniel's ideas.
You guys didn't think I was coming with anything. I know what you're thinking, but it's all right.
We're at 35 minutes right now. And so I would like to thank all those people who have decided to follow us, and we're going to say good evening. as always, we can be found on iTunes by searching for The Back of the Class, and we can be reached via email at thebackoftheclass@yahoo.com. Also, we have the blog, which is thebackoftheclass.blogspot.com. That's where we put up all of our links to stuff we've talked about here. As always, we'd love to hear your feedback on things we can improve, things that might need to be changed, whether you're willing to replace Daniel, how we might be able to expand the conversation beyond what we've talked about so far. So I'm going to draw this evening to a close. As always, I'd like to thank the kids at the back of the class, Daniel, Simon.
It's always a pleasure.
Thanks for being here.